The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. Thanks for joining us today. You can hear this program Sundays from 1 to 2 p.m., and the program repeats Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. We archive each episode at KORCFM.com. This is Dan Kroll, and I am in the Southtown studio today, joined by Wendy Byrne. Some of you might remember Wendy joined us a few weeks back, and we talked a little bit about city issues. Why don't you tell us again, Wendy, you've lived in Corvallis since 1999, and you've been paying attention to city government and state issues and other things along the way.
Correct. Yeah, I actually first got involved with the now defunct Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Board back in 2007, 2008, and I wasn't paying too close attention to city government at that time, but over the last 5 years, certainly, I've been paying close attention.
These things grow over time.
Correct. I think it, and, you know, I've had more free time as I'm not a full-time employee anywhere, and so I kind of put some of my energy into paying attention to the city.
You reached out to KORC to ask, you know, what kinds of coverage we are offering regarding certain city issues. And I will say, as a growing operation here at KORC, we are, of course, focused on diverse music and local events. And we are definitely working very hard at making news a real presence on these airwaves. And it just takes the right people showing up. I personally do have some training in journalism, but somewhere along the way, music, comedy, production, that really caught my eye. And journalism is a whole different animal. So it is very refreshing to have folks like you in the community who are paying attention, who have the time to put into doing some investigation, because these aren't simple issues, and willing to talk about it here on the radio.
Yeah, it's been interesting since the advent of the internet for those of us who got our news in the paper and on the radio and from the very limited television broadcast services before cable, and then it with the internet. It seems like news sources, they've kind of exploded. There's so many ways to get news. It's almost resulted in people getting no news or very limited quality news, especially local news. So, you know, when issues come up with the city of Corvallis, we can't even open up a daily local paper to read about it. And so it's been frustrating to figure out how to get that information. I was super excited to find out about the civics coverage from KORC on Sundays from 1 to 2. And over the last few weeks, I've been listening, and I've been really pleased to hear what's covered there. And I'm excited to be a part of it and to share that information with my friends.
And we definitely appreciate having folks like you considering being on board with what we're doing. And I understand that you went to the most recent city council meeting here in Corvallis.
Yes. You know, I went to the work session, which was on Thursday, in person. I actually even attended the Monday meeting, which is the more formal meeting on Mondays, mostly in person. I'd say the first three quarters of the meeting I was at in person, and then I just kind of needed to go home, and I listened to the end of the meeting. I streamed the end of the meeting from home, which anybody can do, anybody with an internet connection can do, which is helpful.
Has it been a busy summer for the city council?
You know, it's June was fairly busy. July, they always have a slowdown in July. They usually don't meet the first week of July because of the 4th of July holiday. And then, so normally they would have two meetings in July, and I believe they actually didn't have a second work session in July and just had, I'd have to check the calendar on that. But July was quiet, and so it feels like August is picking up again. There's a lot going on, in my opinion.
What are some of the issues that the council is dealing with currently?
You know, they had a hearing for the Marriott Hotel parking lot application this on Monday, and then on Thursday at their work session, they had the first of a series of conversations about revising the strategic operational plan, which they've actually hired a consultant to help them do that. And the first meeting was rather interesting because they took a sharp turn during the meeting and decided they were going to have a different approach to things. And it was a happy surprise. I think it was a good surprise. It surprised everybody in the room, because they all realized that they wanted to do something differently than they had supposed they would do. So I think for people who are paying attention, or even people who aren't, they might be curious to go watch that video of the Thursday meeting, because it was kind of humorous, and it also showed that they do real work at those meetings, and they have a lot to learn, and it shows you kind of, I don't know, it's the parlance is what, the sausage making of government that happens in the less formal meetings.
So if people wanted to go online and view some of these meetings, like the one you're talking about, they can go to Vimeo. We found that it's easy to do an internet search for Corvallis City Council Vimeo, and it will take you to the Corvallis City Council meetings videos page there on Vimeo, where you can watch these. We also went to archive.corvallisoregon.gov, and we had to wait as the page loaded. And it was a very 1990s kind of layout of a website, almost like a Dropbox of folders. And when you finally click on video, they have everything from 2021, 2022, and 2023, but still nothing for 2024 at the city website.
I do. I also get alerts in my inbox when new videos drop, because it's such an exciting thing. I believe I got that by signing up. There's also in the Labyrinth and City of Corvallis webpage, you can sign up for various newsletters. And I think I've signed up for alerts about city council, because I get alerts about meetings. So I can register to watch meetings up ahead of time and put them on my calendar. But that also generates alerts to me for when videos are dropped live. And they usually are available to watch within 24 hours of the meeting, which is, I think, useful. You don't have to wait a week, but sometimes they can be hard to find, unfortunately.
It does seem to take a little bit of work, but if you navigate the site, you can find these videos. Luckily, we at KORC are doing our best to bring the information as we get it, and by bringing voices like Wendy Byrne, who joins us in the Southtown studio. And have you been following the Charlin Ellis case? Because I do remember we were supposed to have that resolved in June. For those who may not know what I mean when I say the Charlin Ellis case, let's back up a little bit. In the best way you can that relates to regular citizens, because I'll say I know this story and I don't know how to explain it in terms that make sense. Can you explain it in terms that make sense?
I think so. I'll try to give the sort of a nutshell as to like how I might have described this to a family member who says, "What have you been doing with your time lately?" And I say, "Oh, I've been really wrapped up with paying attention to city council, because this is one of the things that really got me engaged." Was that back in the fall of 2023, at a Corvallis Climate Action Advisory Board meeting, which I'm a member of that board, I was at the meeting, and Charlin Ellis, who is the counselor for Ward 5 in Corvallis, was appointed chair of that board by then Mayor Biff Traber when the board was created. She, as at the board, we went through a meeting where we were expressing frustration with each other about the fact that we weren't meeting as frequently as we thought we needed to. And it's complicated by the fact that the city's had a hard time retaining staff, and we had inadequate staff support to have the meetings as frequently as we felt like we needed them. So we, as a group, we decided to make a motion to ask city council to have the city manager appoint staff so that we could meet.
Seems like a pretty normal thing to do to fill a vacancy.
Right. Felt very, simple. It felt standard. It didn't feel like we were doing anything that would be inflammatory or wrong. And we actually, looking back at it, in hindsight, it's different. But even looking back at it, I didn't think that there was any other way for us to do such a thing. I felt like the thing that if we felt like we weren't meeting our goals, that we needed to ask council to help us figure out how to meet our goals. I mean, they charge us to provide them with information, and we would like to do that. So I felt like that's how we had needed to handle it, like to be formal. I didn't know that it would have maybe been better to just write an email or knock on the city manager's door and sit down with him and ask him if maybe we could have more support.
And it would seem maybe even if what you were doing was wrong, maybe just a warning or, hey, that's out of order. I mean,
right. So to move it forward. So we asked for this motion to be made, and Charlene, being the chair of the committee or the board, and also being on council, took that motion to council. And I believe it's during her comment period or at the end of each meeting that councilors get a chance to make their comments. And she made the motion. And it was pointed out to her by other members of the council and by the city attorney that the wording of her motion was problematic because it was giving the city manager like a direct order, or not really so much the direct order, but it was telling him how to do his job. It is up to the council to create the policy and to influence what they want, and then it's up to the city manager to run the city staff. They're not supposed to tell him what to do with his staff. And I see that that's not splitting hairs. There's separation of powers there for a reason. But at that very same meeting, some of the other city councilors amended her motion. They pointed out the error. They amended the motion. They came up with a motion that made sense and seemed to not step on toes, to use common language, I would say. And they passed it unanimously. And I thought that was going to be the end of it, only to find out about a month and a half later that the city charter rose up out of a box somewhere and said it had been violated. And then the consequence of violating the charter is that the councilor who violated the charter is immediately dismissed from council. And that didn't happen because Charlene got a lawyer. Now we are at the point where she countersued the city for violating her First Amendment rights of speech, what she can say in a meeting. And the what was going to be a due process hearing at the city was pushed off to be a due process hearing at at the Corvallis Circuit Court. And then that judge who got that recused themselves from that case, and it went down to Eugene. To the federal court in Eugene. And now we are waiting for that court to make a decision.
And they were supposed to have done some kind of deliberation in June, from what I understand, but...
Right. It was my understanding we would hear something in June, and then I think I read something about the Gazette Times that maybe that was put off to July, and then... Just within the last week or 10 days, the Gazette Times, there was a small piece either in the Times or the Advocate, Ed, that said that we're still waiting.
It's kind of, I remember we were supposed to hear the sentencing for the disgraced former president, failed coup leader, and 34-time convicted felon in July, but that didn't happen either.
It's sort of, and not being a lawyer and not having anyone in my immediate family that's a lawyer that I could lean on for information, I don't know how to try to dig into. I don't know how to dig to find that information. You know, it's hard enough to dig around on the City of Corvallis page to find stuff. I have no clue how to find stuff out about the federal courts. You know, so
that's a mess.
It is. You know, it is what it is. But yeah, we are apparently waiting. I don't know if that's because somebody's not well. I don't know if that's because somebody's on vacation. But I feel strongly that if there was some decision that had been made, we would know.
I think what's really important to point out is that this has cost the city of Corvallis over $125,000. That was around the last measured number we saw, around $125,000.
Right. There was at a point, maybe it was in the late spring, when they were adjusting. The city, during their budget hearings, was adjusting the budget to reflect that they needed some extra money to pay for legal costs. And I believe it was $125,000 or up to $150,000. And we haven't heard anything since. And I'm sure that the new lawyers that the city hired after the previous lawyers retired and left office in February, and the city has a new contract with some lawyers in Portland, I would like to think that they are giving the city council on this whole situation, council with SEL, I guess, lawyerly advice, in other words. But who knows? And how do we find that out? I'm not sure. maybe the city council president, Paul Schaefer, might be able to give us an update, and maybe I could ask him.
Wendy Byrne is a resident of Corvallis and joins us today in the Southtown studio here at KORC. We are very happy to bring you information as we get it because, as we mentioned earlier in the interview, journalism in this country, well, let's just say it's not what it used to be, whether on the local scene, on the national scene, and it does boil down to those of us who do have the time and knowledge, and in this case, the interest in our local city politics to show up. And in the weeks to come here on KORC News, Music, and Civics, we do hope to have Wendy and her reports from city council, maybe interviews with councilors, because she knows what's going on. And case in point with the Charlene Ellis case, I have tried to follow it and understand what the real essence of it is. And from what I've concluded is that it just seems to be that the city charter language is held in such a high regard, but as we have seen in other city council settings, the city charter language isn't always so sacred.
Right. I mean, since I've been paying attention and since I was curious about the idea that the charter could be offended, I've been trying to listen in to when councilors make motions or how they what they direct, what they want, what they ask to have done. And I hear the language like the council directs the city manager to blah, 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 fill in the blank, or the council requests this, that, and the other. And I wonder why sometimes it's okay and sometimes it's not. And I'm trying to be objective, because I'm trying to not have it just be something that I was personally frustrated over because I was on the board that was interested in, that created the motion, that created the problem, right? That's like being
the Climate Advisory Board?
The Corvallis Climate Action Advisory Board. I'm trying to see, is this a rule that is fairly applied at all times? And the other interesting thing about this case is it has brought up the understanding that the charter could use a revision, could use a review. The charter language that is at the heart of this was drafted in the 1940s.
And it is a lot of legal mumbo-jumbo that's not exactly easy for the common folk to understand.
Well, I mean, I was reading it for the plain language that it was, and I can't see the violation by using that metric. And I think lawyers read it differently. You know, they have brought up that fact that council would like to do a charter review. That's something that's come up. The last time we had a charter review and we all voted on it, I believe it was 2020, all we did was change some words. Of course, it's all about changing words. We changed pronouns, which was good to be done. I mean, it was good to get the he's, to get to some neutral pronouns and to update that language to run with modern language. But we need to also update the content, not just the pronouns.
Do you know if there are any meetings or plans in the works to update the city charter? It seems that that was discussed during the height of the Charlene Ellis debacle.
Right. I think looking at doing that maybe after the election so that the new council, which is there's an election in November, folks, and guess who's not got anybody challenging her? Charlene Ellis. She's running unopposed. And that's an interesting point because to get back to we can talk about that in a minute. But to answer your question, I think they're going to deal with the charter sometime after the election, which would be appropriate because it's going to take some time to deal with it, and they should probably deal with it when they have fresh members of council in their seats.
Considering what's going on in the national scene, after November, we may have some different priorities altogether.
True, true. It's sort of it's best to get to walk through that door and see what we have on the other side.
We hope to be joined by Wendy Byrne in the coming weeks with reports on what is happening with our city council. She's definitely got the voice and the knowledge, and I know that with volunteer community radio, sometimes we can make time for these efforts. Other times life gets in the way, but week to week, we are going to be here every Sunday and Monday doing our best to bring you the local topics that Corvallis cares about. And as I've said before, we certainly hope to have more of Wendy Byrne on these airwaves. I'd like to thank you again for your time today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks, Dan.
You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics. It's an article from the Corvallis Gazette Times, dated August 8, 2024. Corvallis elected officials are divided over a new parking lot proposed by a downtown hotel owner that would require the demolition of a pair of commercial buildings. The Courtyard by Marriott brought its request for additional guest parking to the City Council after the Planning Commission unanimously denied this expansion in July. Marriott owner Corvallis River Run LLC wants to replace the buildings, which share an alley with the hotel, with a 12-space lot. The hotel is on Southwest 1st Street, and the buildings are on 2nd Street. A one-way driveway would exit through the alley and provide access to the hotel. The council voted 5-4 to tentatively deny the appeal during a meeting on Monday, August 5th. Opponents of the proposal cited concerns about bicycle and pedestrian safety, as well as conflicts with city planning goals and regulations. The Planning Commission raised similar opposition in voting down the proposal in July. We have state mandates that ask us to reduce vehicle miles traveled by personal car, to remove required parking, and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, said Councillor Charlene Ellis. We also have a Corvallis vision, a climate action and a comprehensive plan which directs us to reduce dependency on cars, use land efficiently, and maintain a lively pedestrian-oriented downtown, she said. Ellis added that the Land Development Code states off-street parking must be placed to the rear of the building it serves. Councilors Paul Schaefer, Tracy Yee, Gabe Shepard, and Bree Lewis backed Ellis's motion against the appeal. Councilors Jan Napak, Tony Cadena, Hyatt Lytle, and Lori Chaplin voted against it. Napak spoke in favor of the appeal, saying the developer rebutted every objection to the proposal put forth by the Planning Commission. She said comprehensive plans are not quote-unquote sacred. They are a guide, not an absolute. She also challenged the notion of catering to bicycle and pedestrian traffic over vehicles. Napak said, "This is the business of downtown, and downtown itself is not going to be depending on people riding bikes and walking. People are driving cars and they want to park. That's the reality." Schaefer, who is council president, countered Napak's remarks, saying the Marriott is a benefit to downtown, but the hotel will not, quote, sink or swim on a handful of parking spaces, unquote. He believes Marriott representatives did not make their case that the hotel needs the additional parking capacity, and that was on top of code and planning concerns Schaefer had. City staff are expected to bring formal findings back to the council for consideration and a final decision at a future date. This is from the Corvallis Gazette Times, dated August 8, 2024. You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics.
Is the Supreme Court turning over a new leaf when it comes to giving Don Trump a pass? Doubtful. But Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey's efforts to delay sentencing in the former president's hush money case in New York were rejected Monday by the highest court. A Manhattan jury convicted Trump on all 34 felony charges in the case in May, and a judge set sentencing for September 18th. But last month, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, a Republican and Trump ally, filed an unusual set of motions at the Supreme Court asking the justices to postpone the sentencing until after the November election and to lift the gag order the judge imposed in the case. Missouri's bid was styled as a lawsuit against New York. Under the Constitution, the Supreme Court has the power to hear disputes between states without those disputes going through lower courts. Missouri claimed the hush money prosecution violated the rights of the state's voters by preventing them from fully engaging and hearing from a major party presidential candidate in the run-up to the November election. New York responded that Missouri's bid consisted of generalized and speculative grievances and was legally defective. In a one-page order, the justices denied Missouri's request without explanation. Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito indicated they would have allowed Missouri to file a formal complaint with the high court, but would not grant other relief, the court's order said. Trump was convicted of 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to cover up hush money paid to a porn star in the final days of the 2016 presidential contest. He faces up to 4 years in prison, though some legal experts say a lesser sentence like a fine or probation is more likely. The decision came a day before Bailey faced off in the August 6th primary election against Will Scharf, a member of Trump's legal team. Trying to out-Trump Bailey, Scharf let the good Republican people of Missouri know that, quote, "I win the cases I file. My team and I have won case after case for President Trump, including at the Supreme Court." Of course, Mr. Scharf was defeated by an almost 2-to-1 margin. In a one-page order, the court refused to intervene in the case, meaning a gag order against Trump will remain in place and sentencing on his 34 felony convictions will move forward as scheduled next month. Bailey argued the New York prosecution was politically motivated and urged the Supreme Court to intervene because it has jurisdiction in cases involving one state suing another. He sought to delay sentencing until after the election and lift the gag order placed on Trump that prevents him from speaking out against prosecutors, court staff, and their families. The court rejected Bailey's argument without comment. It's disappointing that the Supreme Court refused to exercise its constitutional responsibility to resolve state versus state disputes, Bailey posted on social media, adding that his office would continue to challenge the illicit prosecutions against President Trump. Trump is slated to be sentenced just weeks before the November election after being convicted on 34 counts for falsifying business records relating to hush money payments to adult film star Stormy Daniels. Justice Juan Merchan, who presided over Trump's trial, pared back the gag order in June, allowing Trump to criticize witnesses and the jurors in the case. However, the judge has refused Trump's request to lift the restrictions in their entirety and has left the former president barred from public comments on the prosecutors and court staff. Last week, an appeals panel also turned down Trump's bid to end the order altogether. For KORC News, I'm Lava Lamp Larry.
You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics, a program that is on Sundays from 1 to 2 p.m., repeated Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m., and archived online at korcfm.com. The Home Energy Fair, put on by the Corvallis Sustainability Coalition, is happening on Tuesday, August 13th. If you are a homeowner or renter, and want to lower your monthly utility bills, you are invited to the Home Energy Fair. Again, it is taking place this coming Tuesday, August 13th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Lily Park in South Corvallis. The park is located at Southeast Bethel Street and Southeast Lily in Southtown. You can learn from exhibitors, cool off with friends and neighbors, and socialize, and they will have complimentary snacks available. The following exhibitors will be on hand to talk to attendees and provide personalized guidance on what they can do to make the shift from fossil fuel-powered homes to energy-efficient homes powered by renewable energy. Abundant Solar, Dwelling B LLC, Building Energy Experts, Electrify Corvallis, Energy Action Team, Home Retrofit Clinics, Energy Trust of Oregon, Hendrix Heating, Oregon Clean Power Co-op, Peak Ductless Heating and Cooling Electric Services, Seeds for the Soul, that's S-O-L, Shift Together, Energy Efficiency and Renewables for Everyone, and Total Comfort Weatherization. They will all be on hand to talk to attendees and provide personalized guidance on what you can do to make the shift from a fossil fuel powered home to a more energy-efficient home that is powered by and sustained by renewable energy. There will also be the Shift Together booth to enter a drawing for an induction hot plate. The Home Energy Fair is this coming Tuesday, 6 to 8 p.m. at Lilly Park in Southtown, and it is co-sponsored by the Corvallis Sustainability Coalition's Energy Action Team and Seeds for the Soul. There's more information online at sustainablecorvallis.org. This is KORC, News, Music, and Civics. I'm Dan Kroll.
You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics. KORC is pleased to present segments of Democracy Now! Today's segment is from August 9th, 2024. For more information on international and national news, go to democracynow.org.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I want to express my gratitude and praise the youths who've made this possible. They have protected this country and given it a rebirth, and we wish for this new Bangladesh to progress with speed.
Nobel Peace Laureate Muhammad Yunus is sworn in as head of Bangladesh's caretaker government just days after student-led protests ousted the prime minister. Then, as Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris faces pressure to define her platform on Palestine, then press freedom groups express alarm over felony hate crime charges brought against accredited photojournalist Samuel Seligson after New York police claim he filmed pro-Palestinian activists hurling red paint during a protest. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israel's launched a new offensive on the southern city of Khan Yunis, attacking dozens of sites after warning people to flee, but offering no safe alternative. This is a mother fleeing yet again with her family.
We are running from the fire. We are running with our children from fear.
Where are you going now?
God knows. We are walking now. They said to go to the humanitarian areas, but there is no safe place here in Gaza. It is all destroyed and damaged.
In Gaza City, multiple children were among at least 15 Palestinians killed in more Israeli strikes targeting schools. At least 30 others were wounded.
Netanyahu, children, only God can help us. He was playing at Abd al-Fattah school. He is an innocent child. They say we are terrorists. Look at what Netanyahu is doing. Look at the Arab world. Only God can help us.
Amid the mounting death and destruction, leaders of Qatar, Egypt, and the United States have called on Israel and Hamas to return to ceasefire talks. The official death toll in Gaza is nearing 40,000, though the true toll is likely far higher. In election news, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz addressed the United Auto Workers in Wayne, Michigan, Thursday, where they appeared alongside UAW President Sean Fain. The UAWs endorsed the Democratic ticket in the November election. This is Kamala Harris.
Look, even if you're not a member of a union, you better thank unions.
That 5-day work week. You better thank unions for that 8-hour work day. You better thank unions for that vacation time. So I'm here to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to the sisters and brothers of UAW for all you are and all we will do over these next 89 days.
In Florida, Donald Trump held a rambling hour-long news conference from Mar-a-Lago where he attacked Harris and made a number of false claims, including that nobody died after the January 6th Capitol insurrection and that Democrats believe in killing babies.
The Democrats are really the radical ones on this because they're allowed to do abortion on the 8th and 9th month and even after birth.
Despite these comments, Trump downplayed the issue of abortion in the upcoming election. He also claimed he almost went down in a helicopter ride with former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown, and that Brown said terrible things about Kamala Harris. Willie Brown quickly refuted those lies. He said he did not fly in a helicopter with Trump. Trump also claimed he had the largest rallies, at one point comparing his January 6th Stop the Steal rally to Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and rally on the National Mall. Also on Thursday, Trump agreed to debate Kamala Harris on ABC News September 10th and called for two additional debates. Harris told reporters she was glad her opponent had finally agreed, adding, quote, hope he shows up. In other campaign news, Kamala Harris's national security adviser, Phil Gordon, denied reports that Harris would consider an arms embargo on Israel. The embargo is a key demand of Palestinian rights defenders. In more election news, the consumer advocate group Public Citizen called out the Federal Election Commission Thursday after the agency announced it will not regulate AI deepfakes in political ads before November. Public Citizen called it a, quote, shameful abrogation of the FEC's responsibilities. The group pointed to a recent post by ex-owner Elon Musk showing an AI-altered image of Kamala Harris. Musk's post was in violation of his company's own rules against posting misinformation without context. In related news, tech giants Microsoft and Palantir announced they're merging their government cloud computing and AI tools to service U.S. military and intelligence agencies. Palantir's clients include ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement, various police departments, and the government of Israel. In Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott signed an executive order Thursday requiring hospitals to obtain patients' immigration status. Abbott claims the move would help Texas calculate the cost of providing health care to immigrants. Rights groups slammed Texas's latest attack on immigrant communities, which is likely to face legal challenges. The Border Network of Human Rights in El Paso blasted Abbott for, quote, using immigrants as a scapegoats for his failed policies and political frustrations, unquote. Here in New York, a 63-year-old climate activist and musician was arrested Thursday, now faces up to 7 years in prison, performing a piece by Bach during a protest outside the headquarters of Citibank. John Mark Rosendahl, a professional cellist, was arrested alongside 14 other peaceful protesters who encircled Rosendahl to shield him from the police while he performed in the public plaza. Rosendahl spoke briefly before he started playing Bach's suites for cello.
We're here for freedom of speech. I'm playing music here today because we are taught that the purpose of music is to sober and quiet the mind and make it susceptible to divine influences.
His words were interrupted as his fellow activists urged him to start playing as police approached. The protest was part of the Summer of Heat on Wall Street campaign, which has been targeting Citibank with peaceful demonstrations all summer. Some 500 people have been arrested since the actions started. Nobel Peace Laureate Mohammed Yunus has been sworn in as head of Bangladesh's caretaker government just days after the ouster of Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina following weeks of student-led protests. Yunus, a longtime critic of Hasina, took the oath during a ceremony at the presidential palace in the capital Dhaka Thursday evening. Over a dozen other members of Yunus's cabinet were also sworn in, including two students who led the uprising against Hasina, Nahid Islam and Asif Mahmood. Adilur Rahman Khan, a prominent Bangladeshi human rights advocate who was sentenced to 2 years in prison by Hasina's government, will also be an advisor to Yunus's interim government. Mohammed Yunus, known as the Banker of the Poor, was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for his work developing microloans. In Tunisia, President Kais Saied has fired Prime Minister Ahmed Ghani, replacing him with Tunisia's social affairs minister just 1 year after Haqqani assumed the role. It's the latest shakeup by President Saied in what critics have labeled a constitutional coup and power grab. It comes ahead of Tunisia's October 6th presidential election, where Saied's top opponents have been jailed or barred from running. Earlier this week, five presidential candidates were sentenced to prison, including Abir Moussi, a prominent Saeed critic who was sentenced to 2 years on charges she insulted the Election Commission. In Japan, Nagasaki's commemorating 79 years since the U.S. dropped an atomic bomb on the Japanese city, killing an estimated 74,000 people just days after the U.S. killed 140,000 people when it dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. This is Nagasaki Mayor Shiro Suzuki.
With no end in sight for Russia's conflict in Ukraine and fears that the violence in the Middle East may expand, we are currently faced with the possibility of losing the peace we have long taken for granted.
This year's ceremony was marked by a diplomatic row after Nagasaki's mayor declined to invite the Israeli ambassador. In protest, the U.S. ambassador, Rahm Emanuel, and other Western envoys boycotted the ceremony. In Thailand, the recently disbanded Move Forward opposition party has regrouped and announced it's now operating as the People's Party.
Without a doubt, we must win the 2027 election. In the next election, our goal is not just to be the leading party like in the 2023 election, but to win and form a single-party government. The term people in our party's name is not just a name. According to our slogan, by the people, for the people, we aim to create a country where ultimate power truly belongs to the people.
The anti-establishment youth-led Move Forward Party won the most seats last year in the election, but was blocked from taking power. Catalonia's parliament Thursday confirmed socialist Salvador Illa as head of Catalonia's new government, ending more than a decade of rule by the separatist movement. Illa is an ally of Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez. His election was said to be upstaged by the surprise vanishing of the Catalan separatist leader Carles Puigdemont after he spoke at a rally in Barcelona Thursday, then evaded arrest by fleeing to Belgium. Spanish authorities are demanding explanations from police about how Puigdemont was able to return to Catalonia and then go into exile again. In Venezuela, President Nicolas Maduro has blocked access to the ex-social media platform for 10 days amidst rising tensions over the disputed results of last month's presidential election. Maduro accused his rivals of weaponizing the platform against him and accused ex-owner Elon Musk of spreading hate. In other developments, Venezuela's Supreme Court found opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez, who claims he won the election, to be in contempt of court after he ignored a court summons mandating his presence for an audit of the election. This comes as Venezuela's top prosecutor is launching a criminal probe into Gonzalez and fellow opposition leader Maria Corina Machado after the pair called on the military to abandon its support for Maduro and stop cracking down on protesters. Meanwhile, Chile's president, Gabriel Boric, said he, quote, does not recognize Maduro's self-proclaimed victory. Back in the U.S., Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has called on Sangamon County Sheriff Jack Campbell to resign over mishandling the fatal July shooting of Sonya Massey, a 36-year-old black woman. One of Campbell's deputies shot Massey in her own kitchen after she called 911 for help. Sean Grayson, who is white, has been charged with first-degree murder. This comes as newly released records show several emergency calls were made from Massey's home regarding her mental health in the days leading up to the fatal shooting. In one call to 911, Massey's mother, Donna Massey, reported her daughter was having a mental breakdown. Donna Massey goes on to tell the dispatcher, quote, I don't want you guys to hurt her, and said she feared a police officer who's prejudiced would be sent to her daughter's home. And today marks 10 years since the police killing of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. His death sparked an uprising led by the Black Lives Matter movement in Ferguson and across the country. Brown had graduated high school just 8 days before his killing. Brown's mother, Leslie McSpadden, was interviewed recently by GMA3, where she said she's still seeking justice for her son. This is part of that interview.
How would you like for your son, your baby, to be remembered?
As a great big brother, all of his siblings love him, he would have been a great contribution to this world had his time not been cut short.
Michael Brown was killed by white police officer Darren Wilson, but a grand jury and a federal investigation cleared Wilson. St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell, who just defeated Congressmember Cori Bush in a closely watched primary, also refused in 2020 to press criminal charges against Darren Wilson. Today, the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Foundation is set to present Brown's case before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights on behalf of Brown's mother. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We have to go to war again by Maksud Odaka. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. This is War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman.
This Democracy Now! Segment was from Friday, August 9th, 2024. For more information on international and national news, go to democracynow.org. You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics.
It's August in Corvallis, and that means it's time for KORC to pay a visit to the 2024 Benton County Fair and Rodeo. A larger affair than your weekly market, the fair is an age-old seasonal tradition where for several thousand years, people in agrarian societies have gathered for commerce, entertainment, and celebration. In the United States, fairs of various kinds draw over 100 million people annually, and have become a showcase of the agricultural industries and children's competitions for animal husbandry. But the county fair has always had room for perennial traditions like music, snacks, games, and education, and the Benton County Fair and Rodeo is no exception. What you're hearing now are the sounds of the Caribbean steel pan drums played by Stephanie and Bill Harris, a traveling duo who plays at fairs across the American West, sharing their uplifting music. On August 1st, I had a brief chance to check in with a couple of local vendors at the fair. It was a sweltering hot day, and the ventilation in the fair arena was pretty loud. I did my best to edit out the background noise. First, I checked in with two young men from a local robotics club.
Okay, I'm with Fred, the Philomath Robotics and Engineering Division, and I'm with...
Caleb Garcia.
And Logan Todd.
Caleb and Logan. Are you guys in high school?
I graduated this last year.
And I'm going my senior year.
Could you guys just tell me a little bit about what types of skills the Robotics and Engineering Division tries to help impart to students?
A lot of it is problem solving, I would say. So we're done with FIRST, which is kind of like the parent organization, and they release a new game every year. And then you have about 2 months, build and design a robot. So there's definitely a lot of, you look at the game, you see what parts you need, you build them, try on error with that. I would say mostly problem solving.
Mechanical stuff, electrical stuff, and a lot of coding. Along with that, it's a lot of problem solving and teamwork and leadership and stuff like that.
So hard skills, but it's like team problem solving, working together. And
definitely.
And what type of... I see a sort of mini excavator looking or claw arm looking robot right now that someone is controlling with some kind of video game controller trying to stack some blocks on each other. What are some other problems that that are posed to you guys to solve with robotics?
Well, this year the game, I'll explain a little bit. We have these like orange rings, and we're shooting into something that's called a speaker that's 7 to 8 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
But like we have a height limit on a robot, so we can't just like go reach in there. So our the way we solved it this year was like we actually shot the rings up high and using some wheels. But we had tried other designs, and there's also another. Game piece called the Amp, which is shorter down, but we ultimately end up going with the speaker. We wanted to go for an Amp Bot as well, but it didn't turn out.
When you say speaker and Amp, is that a literal?
So the theme of this game was crescendo.
Crescendo.
So it was like a lot of music theme stuff. So you see that right there? That's called a speaker.
Got it. Nice. We love that at KORC.
Yeah. I mean, a big part of it is that, the members don't have to pay anything to join. It is a very expensive club. And so we definitely do a lot of fundraising with our local community, and we try and get out as much as we can, such as this fair. This so much we're not looking for sponsors, but we come out, we try and find new members, as well as just giving the kids something to do, have a good time.
Do you guys rely on, like, community donors?
Yeah, definitely.
Where can you find info about that?
Our website has some. I know that. I mean,
you can also donate straight to the Philomath High School website as well.
Okay. What's the Fred website?
Just jumping in from post-production to let you know that the Fred's website, where you can find more info about Philomath High Robotics and Engineering Division, is phred-robotics.com.
Are you guys involved in competitions with other schools and stuff like that?
Yeah. So, FIRST is a global organization where at the lowest level we compete in the like all of the Pacific Northwest, like up to Washington, down to, I don't think there's any PNW in California, but Washington and Oregon, there's a lot of competition.
Is that an annual thing?
But yeah. Once a year we get a new game to compete with. The step up after local competition, there's like you can go straight to Worlds, which is like every team around the world all comes to Houston, Texas, in the NASA Space Center, and they crown a reigning champion there after like a week of play.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm.
And as you can see right here, we also have CV that's here today. And later in the week at this fair, we're going to have, I believe, Swarm, which is from Albany. And then I think Corvallis might come back as well, because they were here yesterday.
CV is Crescent Valley. Got it. Well, Caleb and Logan, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Awesome.
Next, I wandered over to a booth hosted by Benton County's Community Emergency Response Team.
I'm with Larry, who's with the Community Emergency Response Team of Benton County, and he was going to tell us a little bit about the Lynn Benton Alert System. What is that, Larry?
Lynn Benton Alert System is an emergency notification system that's run by the Benton County Sheriff's Office, Office of Emergency Management, and it's designed to notify anyone in the county about emerging emergencies. So if you're familiar with the Ready, Set, Go alerts, this is the system that is in the Lynn Benton's alert system. It's recommended that you sign up for it. To do that, you just go to the Benton County Sheriff's Office website, and there will be either an emergency notification button or a Lynn Benton alert button. Click on that, and it'll take you to the database that gets you registered. You can register... it'll ask your name and your address so that they know where you live to know if you're involved in an emerging emergency. And you have different options of alerts, how you can want to receive them. You can receive a text message, you can get a cell phone message or voicemail message, you can sign up a landline, or you can sign up for email alerts, or you can sign up for all of those.
Yeah, thank you for informing us about the Lynn Benton Alert System. So I see it at your booth here, the Benton County Community Emergency Response Team, that the team provides education and training in evacuation planning, team organization, medical and first aid skills, disaster psychology, fire extinguisher training, search and rescue and basic damage assessment, and community engagement and education. What kind of hazards specifically should people be prepared for in Benton County?
Well, I think the main hazards that people think about in Benton County are, particularly this time of year, wildfires. And secondly, probably earthquakes, particularly the Cascadia subduction zone scale earthquakes. And there are a few areas of the county that might be subject to flooding.
Yeah.
But those are the main hazards in this part. If you get over closer to the coast in Lincoln County, then they've got tsunamis as well to worry about.
Does the team focus on more just like emergency situations as well? Like if you were involved in some sort of traffic accident or something like that in the community? Because the first aid component sounds like it might play into that.
Well, as a Good Samaritan, you certainly have those skills, but that's not what the focus of CERT is. It's for an emergency that occurs within the county or within the area covered by the CERT team. So if there is an emergency, the Benton County Sheriff's Office may elect to deploy us and send us to a certain area. Let's say there's an earthquake and they want to check a particular neighborhood to see if there's any injuries or people who need assistance. Mm-hmm. We help bridge the gap between the time the emergency occurs and when professional first responders can actually get to the site. So we get in there maybe ahead of them. If it's a huge event, they just get spread so thin and they just can't get to everybody fast enough. So if someone has arterial bleeding, by the time the first responders get to them, if they haven't been treated, they'll bleed out. So we would go in and, you know, apply a tourniquet as a first aid measure and, you know, extend the time that person survives until the first responders could get to them.
Well, that certainly sounds like an essential role to play in the community. Larry, I appreciate you talking with KORC, and we're glad that the Benton County Community Emergency Response Team is here in this baking hot arena at the Benton County Fair 2024. So thanks for talking with us, Larry.
Thank you.
there you have it. Disaster preparedness and robots. A couple of highly relevant topics for 2024 and our brief excursion to the Benton County Fair and Rodeo. You can tune in next week for some more check-ins with the fair folk, and thanks for listening.
Do you want to stop smoking cigarettes? I thought about quitting for years, but only seriously in my early 40s. It took me another 8 years to quit. I made 3 serious attempts before making it. Later, I learned that most people fail several times before they quit. So the more you fail, the closer you are to quitting. Failing an attempt is not a sign of failure, but a sign of progress. You can't quit if you don't try, and the more you try, the closer you are to quitting. For some reason, women need to fail more times than men. When I did quit, the first 4 days were the hardest. Strong urges continued for the first 3 months. The following 3 months, the urges tapered quickly. Every once in a while, I craved a cigarette, but the cravings tapered off in frequency and strength. I knew a cigarette would relieve the craving. What I did not know was that if I did not have a cigarette, the craving would also go away. The secret to quitting was having patience and fortitude, not another cigarette. Smoking kept the craving strong and returning, but by not smoking, the urges weakened and became less frequent. My cravings mostly disappeared in 6 months. After 1 year, I felt like I had never smoked. For information on how to quit, call 800-QUIT-NOW or go to smokefreeoregon.com. My name is Donald Russell. I have lived in Corvallis, Oregon for over 25 years.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of KORC News, Music, and Civics. If you'd like to be a part of this effort and help us report the news, conduct interviews, and otherwise put the community on the radio every Sunday from 1 to 2, every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m., that is, and all these programs are archived at korcfm.com. If you'd like to help us out and be a part of this, send us an email, info@korcfm.com. Thanks for listening to your community radio station, KORC. You can find out more about us, korcfm.com.
KORC is a listener-supported community radio station serving Corvallis. We also receive support from the Benton County World Breast and Chest Feeding Celebration, coming up on August 31st at the Corvallis Community Center. The public is invited to attend this free event from noon to 4 p.m. for free food, music, prizes, a resource fair, and more. More information can be found at bit.ly/BentonWIC-celebration or by calling or texting 541-766-6812.